You're listening to Trek FM.
Hi, this is Robert Duncan McNeil, also known as Tom Paris from Star Trek Voyager. You're listening to Trek FM.
Maybe it's not the destination that matters. Maybe it's the journey.
Welcome. This is another episode of To the Journey.
To the journey!
My name is Charlene Schmidt, and I'm one of your co-hosts on this fantabulous show. And with me, as always, is...
Tristan Riddell.
Tristan, I don't know about you, but I think the season is hitting me a little bit. I'm feeling a little sentimental. I'm feeling a little generous. I'm buying gifts for family and friends. And even though there's absolutely no snow on the ground, I'm really in the mood for the holiday season. How about you?
I am a big fan of the holiday season. I hate the winter. I can't stand it. I think it's pretty when I'm inside and it's warm.
Yes.
I wish snow was warm. I really do. And then I would love winter. But the thing is, the thing about this time of season, it gets me to start thinking back, you know, like thinking about my life and thinking about, you know, like the people who came before me, like in the way back machine, you know, looking at like 1999.
1999 has a little bit of significance to what we're going to be doing today, and that is a commentary for the wonderful fifth season episode 1159, which of course takes place right around this time of year, so we thought it would be fitting.
You know, this is a very different kind of Star Trek episode, and we'll get into it as we do our commentary, but it's, you know, like, we haven't really talked about this episode a lot on To the Journey. This is one of those episodes that kind of has fallen through the cracks a little bit.
Yeah, I think because it is different, it does slip through the cracks, or there is a certain set of fans who just really don't like it because it is so different. It just doesn't work for them, but... You know what? We ought to just get it going and start talking about it as it's running. So, like with all countdowns, if you want to follow along with us, cue up your episode and we will give you a countdown and we'll go 3, 2, 1, play. And then you can sync right on with us. Now, before we do that, Tristan, do you want to give us a quick synopsis of what this episode is about, just in case people don't remember?
Well, what Netflix says is the Voyager crew members swap stories of their family histories. Janeway is most proud of her ancestor, Shannon O'Donnell, a celebrated astronaut. Or so we think.
Let's get this baby going. Let's count down and 3, 2, 1, play. Off we go.
All right.
So I think that long-time listeners know that we like this episode. But maybe for those who are a little new to the party, this is definitely a sentimental favorite of mine. I always watch it at this time of year, as I do Star Trek Generations, because reasons.
I didn't know that. I didn't know that. No, I'm completely blanking on any kind of reference that we've ever made to 1159 right now.
It might have been a very long time ago, but, or maybe I'm thinking of The Ready Room. I know that we did do an episode of The Ready Room for 1159, probably last year, and it is definitely a favorite of mine. I really appreciate it.
So what do you like most about it?
I love the fact that it is different. It is an examination of Janeway's, I guess you could say, ancient history, her distant relatives. But of course, I love Kate Mulgrew in a different role as a Janeway ancestor and how that is different as opposed to Janeway. And I also like the message that a lot of times the past is not as glorified as we think it is. You know, like sort of like the game of charades, like the more things get passed down, the more distorted they become. And I think we romanticize the past, when really it might have not been so great. And this episode shows that. And even though Shannon O'Donnell was a wonderful lady, she wasn't necessarily an astronaut.
Yeah, it's kind of a variation of the old saying of never meet your heroes. You know, like
right.
I am, you know, us as Star Trek fans, you know, we are absolutely terrified of meeting a Star Trek actor in person and them being a jerk to us.
Because, and fortunately, they more often than not And I know some people have had bad experiences, but usually it's a very good experience because they're pretty nice people.
Yeah, I think on average, Star Trek actors are a lot nicer than other fandoms or other people. But I think what's really funny is that, if Janeway had the opportunity to meet this ancestor that she, has glorified and looked up to her entire life, I feel like she would be disappointed and she would meet her hero and be chagrined.
Yeah, it kind of makes me wonder, would she have even entered into Starfleet, or would she have maybe even idolized her father that much more because her father was career Starfleet?
Right, definitely. And as we know from the show, as well as one of our favorite novels,
Mosaic. Take a
Mosaic. this takes place in Indiana. So, we don't know how long the Janeways have been in Indiana. I can't remember if they say it in the episode.
I don't think they specify.
But we know that the O'Donnell / Janeways, they start in Indiana in 1999-2000. So that just goes to show that 400 years can go by.
And people stay in the same spot.
And people stay in the same spot.
I wouldn't be terribly surprised. I mean, I think it's a fairly recent thing for people to stray from their families as much as we do in the 21st century. I mean, a lot of times you're born somewhere, you're raised somewhere, you have your own families in the same place where you grew up, mm-hmm. and you're born, you live, you die in the same place. I feel like moving around is almost kind of an outlier anymore because you were expected to work on the farm and things like that. You had to keep the family business moving. And these days, our economy isn't like that quite so much. And so people have more freedom to move around, or jobs are elsewhere, what have you, or as the case is maybe with my immediate family, like just me and my husband and my cat, we move ourselves and then, who knows? Maybe we'll have a family out here in LA. Maybe we won't, or I don't know. It's all up in the air.
Yeah, speaking of winter, previously, I was just talking with my wife about how, we look outside and it's below freezing, we're shivering, and she turns to me and she goes, "Why do we live here again?" And I'm like, "Well, it's because we were born here."
You know what? Anywhere else that I've lived besides LA this time of year, I'm saying the same thing.
Oh, I can't stand it.
Why?
Can't do it. All right. So here's the thing. This originally was conceived to be a the opposite of a bottle show, I guess you could call it, where they the writers originally didn't want to show Voyager at all. It just wanted to be the 1999-2000 era, and that's it. But they realized that, as they were writing it, they're like, this isn't working. It's not grounded at all in what the show is. And so they ended up spending a third on the on Voyager. But what I find even more interesting is that this was originally supposed to be a Q episode.
Say what now?
Yes, This episode was originally supposed to be a Q episode where actually I think John DeLancey came up with the idea.
No way.
He went to the producers, he went to the writers and said, "Do you know what would be interesting? I think if I'm remembering correctly, so people please correct me if I'm wrong. He goes to the Star Trek makers and says, "What would be interesting is if we had, Janeway in the 90s or, Janeway in 2000 and Q is hanging around with Janeway's ancestors."
Oh,
and,
boy.
And so it's kind of off of the play of, Quinn hanging out with Riker's ancestors.
Yeah, apparently kind of his crush on Kathy goes way back.
And he said, something along those lines. And when I read that, I mean, I like 1159, but when I read that, I was just like, "Oh, crap, I really wish they would have made that episode."
Whoa, seriously, wow. Okay, I clearly have not read the Memory Alpha page on this show because I did not know that factoid, and now my day is halfway made and then halfway, "Oh my God, why didn't they do that? Ah,
no."
What an opportunity, because as good as this episode is, could you imagine Q in it? And this could almost be not quite the tapestry mm-hmm. of Voyager for Janeway, but it could be a kind of, I don't want to say a redress of that, but it would be kind of along those same, I don't know what I'm saying. I've just completely lost it in my mind.
Because what I was thinking is that, you know, if the originally there was, like, once they abandoned the Q idea, they said, they're like, okay, well, what if we just make it an anti-bottle show? And they're saying, oh, but that doesn't work because we need it to be grounded in Star Trek. What better way to ground it in Star Trek than with Q?
Right.
And so, you know, like don't show Voyager at all. Don't show Paris and Kim and Chakotay and B'Elanna and all them. You know, like, just have Janeway's ancestors, and then Q, like, have him work at the bookstore or something.
Wouldn't that be something?
And he kind of pushes her to push him to create the gate. And so, you know, like, and then, you know, Janeway finds out that, like, then maybe we fast forward to the end of the episode and Janeway's looking at a picture and she's like, oh, holy crap. And she sees that it's Q.
Oh my gosh, would that not be amazing?
End of episode.
All those times that she looked at those photos and she finally discovers who that guy is and it's Q. Holy crap. How amazing would that be? Plus, I do think, as much as I do like the scenes on Voyager, where everybody's talking about their other relatives, I mean, I could definitely see this episode working without any of that. And in fact, it could have been stronger.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, the actor who plays the you know, what's his name? Something Janeway? Like, is the guy.
Henry Janeway?
Henry,
are you talking
Henry?
Janeway Sr. or?
Janeway Sr., yeah.
Okay, yes. Henry Janeway.
Now, has he ever been in Star Trek before? I can't remember.
Oh, golly. I want to say he has, but right off the bat, I don't have the information on hand. Everybody go to Memory Alpha, look it up. I'm sure it's easily accessible there.
I think most people would recognize this actor from Lost. He played a very pivotal role.
That's right, he did.
In Lost.
Yes.
He played the dad of... Oh, why can't I remember his name? He's an amazing actor. But he was the Admiral in Pegasus and The Next Generation.
Oh, okay. That's why he...
A lot of Star Trek connections there. No, he wasn't the Admiral. He played the dad of the Admiral in Lost.
okay. I think
I know that's
I'm
a roundabout
lost.
Way. Yeah. Kevin Tai is his name.
I'm in post-caffeine slump. In my part of the day.
Yeah, Kevin Tai is his name.
Okay. Seems to me that he's one of those actors who's done a lot of guest roles. You know, he's like the guest working actor. Done a lot of things. You've seen him in a few things. You might not necessarily know who he is, but you've definitely seen him.
Yeah. Yeah. He's all over the place. He's a big character actor. Terry O'Quinn. That's the actor's name. Terry O'Quinn.
Aha. Okay.
Yes.
I gotcha.
He played the father of Terry O'Quinn in Lost.
Okay.
Now we got that settled. We can move forward.
Okay. Deep breath.
Yeah. So we're in the bookstore, and I love that, like, they really push the bookstores are out of date motif, because everything in this bookstore, like even the cash register, looks 100 years old.
It's ancient. It really is. And I don't know if I felt this way quite so much in the 90s, but these days finding a real bookstore anymore is problematic. They are hard to come by, and especially mom and pop shops. You probably can find a Barnes and Noble, but you're probably just your first instinct anymore in the 21st century. You're going to go to Amazon. You know you are.
Oh, yeah. Like Barnes and Nobles are a dime a dozen up where I live. Like, you can find one at every corner. It's like they're freaking Starbucks or Walgreens. And
oh, I don't know if they're that common, but they're certainly out there in the strip malls. That's
no, I'm
sure.
Talking about where I live. Like,
okay. Really? They're
yes,
everywhere?
I have three within 5 miles. Not less than 5 miles. I have three, like, in within 3 miles of me.
I have a feeling that's not the norm. And I could be wrong, because here in LA, you see a Barnes & Noble every few miles or so. And then there are a couple of indie bookstores. There's a really cool one in downtown LA called The Last Bookstore, which everybody ought to check out if you're in the area.
Now, one thing that has really, and like speaking of indie stores in Los Angeles, one thing that has really gone, and kind of going off topic here, one thing that's kind of go to the wayside is record stores, like used record stores. Mm. And Amoeba in Los Angeles is, I think, the largest used record store in the States. and I would go there constantly when I lived in Los Angeles.
Okay, do not tell my husband about that store. He would spend all day and all of our money in that place alone.
It's friggin' amazing. I haven't been to Los Angeles in a long time, so I have no idea if it's even there still. But it's gigantic. It's like three floors. It's crazy.
Wow. That's pretty cool. That sounds even bigger than the last bookstore, which is two stories. And it's kind of cool because the counters where the employees are at, they're all made out of old books.
Nice.
It's pretty majestic display. One thing that I love about 1159 is, yes, it was shot in 1999, takes place at the very end of the year 2000. And it's modern day, and they of course have had to make a set to recreate it, but it still feels genuine. You know how like TV can sometimes get that a little wrong?
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like they did just fine here, which is cool. I like this intimate intimate environment that they're in. It's low lighting. They're having a good cold mug of beer. What about this era does it not convey? It's great. And it's nice to see Janeway or Kate Mulgrew out of a uniform.
Yeah.
And she's not in some big Victorian costume thing either. She's in good old 20th century clothing wearing denim, and it looks really nice.
Or a chef's outfit.
A chef's outfit. Wearing Neelix's chef hat.
I completely forgot. And I even at the intro of this episode, you hear me talking about 1999 and 2000 and everything like that. This totally doesn't take place in 1999.
No, I was going to correct you on that, and then we veered off on it, but I'm going to make that correction now. It was shot and aired in 99, but it takes place in 2000 because they're talking about the true millennium, which really did occur in 2001, unlike the year 2000 when everybody celebrated it.
Right.
Yes. So why don't we have a Millennium Gate already? I really feel like this is a missed opportunity, and I wish this is one of the things that Star Trek would have predicted for our future that came true.
Yeah, there's a lot of things that I wish would come true in Star Trek. One of them not being World War III.
And that's, you know, it seems sometimes like every day we get closer to that, and then other times, I don't know if I hope we're going to avert it. I don't want to see that in my lifetime, but there is a pessimistic side of me that feels like things are unfortunately going to get worse before they start to get better, because it's like humanity has to hit a certain rock bottom before we start picking up the pieces. And that's really sad.
Well, let's just assume that the Vulcans are going to come back well before then. So it'll be cool.
2063, baby. I'm ready. I'm going to be in Montana when that happens. Now, I have to mention one thing here. I actually got to see where they shot this when I got to tour the Paramount lot earlier this year in September. And these old buildings, they're out there. They're on the Paramount lot. They just put the signs on them, essentially. And this is almost exactly how they look, except for the snow, which they, of course, had to create because they're in Los Angeles. But it's pretty neat. I mean, you really do feel like you're there.
That's really cool. Kate Mulgrew looks so good out of uniform.
I know, right? And that's one of the things that really brings some charm to this episode.
Mm. Now, what did you think about their relationship? What did you think about Henry Janeway and Shannon O'Donnell?
You know, the first few times I think I watched this episode, I thought she got along better with Jason, the son, than she does with Henry Janeway. But as I've gotten a little older, I see a little more of the chemistry. I see why and how they got this to work. But at first, it just seemed like she and Jason had a lot more in common. How about you?
Well, I don't think society would ever accept a Jason, Shannon O'Donnell relationship. I don't
probably think not. Probably no, that's not. A bit of a May-December romance.
I didn't really dig on Henry Janeway that much. Like, I never really got the attraction. I even though I didn't like Workforce, I got that attraction.
Did you?
Yeah, even though the Prax guy.
Prax!
Oh, Kashyyyk.
Kashyyyk. Even though I didn't like Kashyyyk because I thought he was slimy and weird, I still understand where, you know, the attraction came from just because, you know, he's super intelligent, he's cultured and everything like that. He's commanding. I understood where that's coming from. But with Henry Janeway, I just, he's obstinate. He's backwards thinking. He, I just don't think of him as, like, if you look at all the men that Janeway has been attracted to. Now, granted, I know this isn't Janeway.
Yes,
you know, this
yes,
isn't,
yes.
This isn't Catherine Janeway, but this is still Kate Mulgrew, or this is still Star Trek. I don't know. It just, it, he is definitely the wild card out of all the men in her life.
You know, I don't know. I do see a little bit of where this comes from and why it works, where Shannon O'Donnell is the explorer and she thinks about the future. She likes futuristic sciencey things. He's completely rooted in the past and probably needed to go live in Rome at the turn of the millennium, of the last millennium. And so I see that as a balancing each other out, where that's how that works. And they can keep each other rooted in moderation instead of in their own little heads, which, you know, maybe they're a little bit extreme. Also, I think the Janeway stubbornness trait came from Henry Janeway. That's where that came from.
15 generations removed.
Well, it's strong.
I mean,
he's the last
holdout. I always thought it was funny, the idea of your car breaking down and then you just start a life where your car breaks down. I always thought that was weird, but then I met a guy who is from Hawaii, and he came over 10 years ago to visit his sister. And somehow he ran out of money, or he lost some money while he was here. He was just supposed to be here for a couple of weeks, and he didn't have enough money for the return trip to go back to Hawaii.
Oh, wow.
And his sister wasn't going to help him out. Like, she didn't have any money either. So he ended up just starting a life here in Illinois.
Wow.
And he's been here for over a decade.
Dang. Well, you know, I guess with circumstances like that, you don't have a whole lot of choice if you have no money.
Yeah, it's just,
you do what you got to do.
I can't imagine making a trip, like saving up money for a one-way flight and then like not spending the money for a round trip, you know, like how, like not thinking about how am I going to get back?
Yeah, well, of course, and Shannon O'Donnell wasn't necessarily planning on staying in Indiana. She was going to go down to Florida. But yes, her car breaks down, and then all of a sudden there's this guy, and well, we know the rest is history.
Yes.
I don't know if I could do that, though. I don't know if I could find myself or stumble into some place and fall in love with it or fall in love with someone enough to where I would want to absolutely stay and spend the rest of my freaking life there almost sight unseen. Like, after a day or two, you don't know entirely what you're getting into.
Oh, yeah, not at all. I mean, there, I could see, you know, me and my wife visiting someplace and falling in love with it and then coming back and maybe thinking about living there and moving there one day, but never, like, it's too romanticized and completely impractical to think where you're just, you know, like, you know what? Let's just stay here. Let's not go back.
Yeah. Okay. Now, in my history, I mean, I have actually moved with my husband a couple of times to places that I didn't know much about before we did end up moving there, like Fargo or even to Los Angeles. Now, Arizona was a different story because we always loved to go there, and that's why we did move there. But it was different because I wasn't alone. I was with him. That's a completely different thing, I think.
Yeah.
By yourself, just completely on your own, not knowing at all what you're doing, I don't know. That's a level of scary that I guess I'm grateful I've never had to experience.
Now, we just saw a family photo with Shannon O'Donnell, much older, like gray, wrinkled, and everything like that. Mm-hmm. And obviously, it's just Kate Mulgrew and old people makeup. I thought that makeup was amazing.
Totally. I mean, she looks like she's 115 and going strong. And you could still tell it's her, though.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, very
absolutely.
Good.
Now, clearly, she survived. What year? Did it say what year the picture was taken?
No, I don't think it does.
So, okay, so if it's 2000 and she's in her 40s, 60, in like 2063 is when the Vulcans came back. So, yeah. So she would have been like, yeah, she would have had to have survived World War III in that photo then.
Indeed.
Wow. Yeah.
How about that?
I'm surprised they didn't mention that in the show.
Well, seeing as how the writers sometimes don't remember their own canon, yeah. I'm not entirely surprised. And it's unfortunate because that would have been a cool footnote.
Now, this is another actor who has been in everything. He has been everywhere, and I love him a lot. His name is John Carroll Lynch, and many of you probably know him as Drew Carey's brother on The Drew Carey Show.
That is how I know him, indeed. Back in the 90s, I was a big fan of The Drew Carey Show.
I love The Drew Carey Show. That is one of my favorite sitcoms of all time.
Mine too. Every time there was a new episode, I would watch it back when watching TV on its actual airtime was a thing. I mean, it was my alternative to Friends. Everybody was watching Friends, but yes. I much preferred The Drew Carey Show. They were more real people to me.
Yes, I hardcore agree with you on that one, because I didn't really watch Friends when it was on the air. And but whenever Drew Carey was on, I made sure that I was not doing anything else.
Nice.
It was a lot like Star Trek in that way. Whenever Star Trek was on, boom, not doing anything else. Clear not homework, out. Not dinner, not nothing.
Yep. Drew Carey's show, as well as Whose Line Is It Anyway? Because Drew Carey was on that show as well. And I loved that show from the British version. And when those two were airing at the same time, boy, that was a big TV night.
Now, did they darken Mulgrew's hair for Ancient Janeway?
You know, I'm not really sure. This could have just been her hair color as it was. I don't want to, like, naturally, but you know what I mean? Where that's just what her real hair was. I don't really know. Okay. They mess with Janeway's hair so much. I don't know what is Mulgrew's real hair as opposed to the Janeway hair. It's some weird mishmash of them both in season 5. I think they add, like, not extensions, but they add hair pieces to thicken it up. And okay. So the Janeway hair, therefore, might be a little blonder than Mulgrew at this point. Is what I'm saying. It's very hard to keep track.
So O'Donnell was having the classic Neil Armstrong dream. You know, we've all been there.
Right, as you do, all the time.
Yeah.
Happens to me at least once a week. The Matrix of Doom. God, that's so 1999.
The Matrix of Doom. That's so great. They combined one of the hit movies of 1999.
With a 90s game.
That is Hollywood writing for you right there.
Man, no kidding. That is meta.
Let's take two things that were really popular in the 90s and just boom, put them together.
Yeah, name drop. Love it.
This kid has eyebrows like me.
Got big bushy eyebrows?
Big bushy eyebrows. Eugene Levy caterpillars going on.
Yeah, nothing wrong with that though. I mean, no unibrow on either of you.
Thankfully. So I'm trying to, you know, put my finger on the motif of this bookshop. The design motif.
Okay.
It is definitely all over the place. This is kind of like when you go into a Bennigan's, you're like, what are they going for here?
What's a Bennigan's?
What's up? I'm seeing a lot of different stuff on the walls.
It is kind of a mishmash of a great many things. I think it's just entirely whatever Henry Janeway thinks is a good idea at the time.
Yeah.
And it really might not be a really great idea in the end, but it's his bookstore. And maybe that's, I don't know, I've never thought of that as a bad thing. I mean, I kind of like it when bookstores are unique, and that kind of is what gives it its own little charm.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that is the motif, that there is no motif. The motif is made up and the points don't matter.
Yes, did you ever think that this episode was a little slow?
It's supposed to be slow though. You know what I mean? It's not an action thing. There's definitely no firing of any weapons. I think it's a nice change of pace. It's a good one where if it's a nice snowy day outside, you pick up a cup of hot cocoa and you sit back, you put your feet up and you watch this. And it's supposed to be slow, and I don't mind it in this instance. Do you think it's too slow?
I think there are certain parts that could definitely you know, have some a little bit faster editing or like move the plot a little forward. But what I did enjoy was that this was such a real moment. Like when he just got the phone call, he said, he's like, oh, first phone call in 3 days and it's the wrong number. I'm sure that there are several business owners, like self-employed business owners who feel that way.
Probably. And of course, there's no caller ID in the bookstore, so you can't see who it is. One thing I always wondered was after they built the Millennium Gate, you know, over time, because we were just talking about bookstores not that long ago and how a lot of indie shops have not survived the Amazon age, I wonder how Henry Janeway's shop fared. You think it did okay just because the Millennium Gate?
Yeah, I think having a dedicated bookshop in something as iconic as the Millennium Gate, I think, you know, like having that kind of primo space, because it's kind of like, you know, like having a bookshop at the airport.
I was just thinking that because they're everywhere. You know, any major city airport has newsstands all over the place.
Now, granted, you know, like that's a little bit of a different situation because you're about to get on a plane for a couple of hours. So you might need something to read if you forgot something from home. But, you know, like when you're out shopping and when you're around, you know, like especially if it's a specialty bookstore, if it's hard to find items, I think you do fine because, you know, like with Amazon, it's great for when you need the new, you know, Girl with a Dragon Tattoo sequel.
Right.
And because you can find it anywhere, you know, with the bestsellers. But I mean, out of print stuff like Charlie Chaplin's biography or, you know, like first editions or stuff like that, I would a lot of people would travel far to get access to those kind of items.
True. And since the Millennium Gate was already a tourist destination in the first place, maybe this is yet another reason for book lovers to go see the Millennium Gate.
Yeah.
And I could see Henry Janeway turning to a more specialized bookstore format as time goes by. Don't you?
I think so. I mean, I wasn't a business major and I'm not a bookstore owner, but I think, you know, you got to find your niche somehow because you cannot rely on people wanting to stimulate their own economy. You know, all you can rely on is people wanting the cheapest of things. And so even when I'm at Barnes & Noble, like I'll find a book or I'll find like a graphic novel and I'm like, wow, this is double the price that it is on Amazon. And I can scan it with my phone and it gives me the Amazon price right away.
Right.
I'm not going to buy it there. No, you know, even if it's in my local economy, because I'm a cheap bastard.
Hey, we all are.
But if I found a specialty store that had first editions or signed copies or rare books or something, you know, like things that aren't necessarily in English, then yeah, I would go to that bookstore all the time and just explore and try to find it because you can't always find that stuff online. Definitely can't find it on Amazon.
True.
At least in the Prime section. So yeah, I think that's definitely the way to go with bookstores. But then again, like I said, I don't know what I'm talking about.
Any bookstore owners out there who want to totally counteract everything Tristan just said, please send your mail to trek.fm/contact. I like how comfortable Janeway looks. Here.
I know, right? Like she has her arm above her head.
Mug in hand, just listening and enjoying herself. It's really nice to see that. It kind of continues that whole family trend that Voyager's supposed to be about. And I wish they would have done that a little bit more, where in their off time, we see them just hanging out and having a good time.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, to me, that's what Voyager really was in the end. They really did become a family. They cared more for each other than just being a crew. Very important.
They needed more of these moments. I think they needed more of these, you know, TNG poker moments.
Indeed. Indeed.
Yeah.
Now, Harry's story about his relative who went on the deep space mission, do you get anything out of that except for the fact that the Kim family lineage just seems to be a bunch of fools?
I think it's fun. I like it. It makes me think of Chuck Heston and Planet of the Apes. Like,
oh, yeah.
You know, like just like, you know, old style, you know, sci-fi where, you know, you have to sleep in order to go travel. And I don't know. I liked it.
It just seems like something that would happen to one of Harry's relatives. And that's why Harry has his bad luck. You know, that sort of thing. Just a streak of, oh, man, nothing. Really? Well, shoot, we better go back.
So, like, right now, you know, as we all know, they're swapping stories of their ancestors. And, like, even, you know, Paris, he said, he's like, yeah, just mainly farmers and, you know, one pilot and everything like that. You know, do you know anything about your ancestors? Like, was there anything grandiose or fantastical about your ancestors that you know of?
Unfortunately, I don't know that much about anybody beyond my great-grandparents. And no, unfortunately, I have no idea if I have some awesome ancient lineage that I sprang from. No. I have no idea. I'm not really into genealogy, so I've never really bothered to track it down. No, just a whole lot of, I would say, I don't know, in my more immediate family, in the generations about two or three removed, there's mental illness, and some of my roots come from Italy. That's about all I really know. How about you?
bad tickers, and we were kicked out of every decent country, and so we just kept moving east. And we ended up here. That's of course an exaggeration and a joke, but with me, like, I don't know anything specifically about my people, about the Riddells or the Muses, and it's all I know mainly is that, you know, Riddell is a Scottish town.
Okay.
And that's I guess ultimately where my people hail from, and I know I'm a descendant of one of the clan leaders. His name is William Riddell. And, you know, beyond that, like, you know, like hop, skip, and a jump, and you go to my great grandma. She was a barrel racer. You know,
hey, that's something.
That's about
kind
all
of a
I know.
Cool factoid.
Yeah.
Okay.
And she just died, like a year or so ago.
Oh, really? Wow. So she lived to be pretty old.
Very over 100.
Nice, nice. My great grandmother on my father's side had good genes too. She lived to be 96, and she died a couple of years ago. And she came over the boat from Italy.
Amazing.
Yeah, she ran the gift shop at the Warren Air Force Base in Cheyenne, Wyoming, when that place was a really hopping big deal because World War II, and then therefore the Cold War, made that a very popular destination. And then as the years went by, it became less and less important, but...
not the gift shop at the Millennium Gate?
Unfortunately, no. That was a few decades off, yeah. But she was a very remarkably stubborn woman herself, and so that's kind of where I think I get my stubborn streak from.
I love it. I'm, you know, when we watch this on Netflix, we have the subtitles on so that we can listen to each other. And I love some of these, you know, when they put the actions in parentheses. And I think I just saw like a chuckled softly or something like that.
Yes.
And it just makes me, it amuses me that we just saw chuckling softly.
Imagine that. Chuckles likes to chuckle. It's good stuff. The Netflix captions. Whoever has that job, I want that job. I know I've said it before, but I'll say it again because I really do. That has got to be the best job.
Oh my gosh, no. I do not want that at all.
No? Why wouldn't you want that job? Because you could put in so many cool Easter eggs as fan service to the people looking at these things.
I send stuff off to be transcribed constantly. Like, there's not a week that goes by where I don't send off video material to be transcribed and subtitled and everything like that. And I tried doing it myself for a little bit, couldn't stand it. I gave it to my assistant to do, and it just came up too much. And so now I outsource all of it. And just constantly watching and listening and typing and having to get everything perfect and then having to time it is freaking difficult.
Well, that I believe, but with good quality audio, and if you're a fast typer, and then you've got the right equipment, where I think like a real transcriber has like a foot pedal to start and stop the audio, that wouldn't be a bad gig at all. As long as it's good quality audio. Now, that's the thing, is a lot of transcription that's not TV is awful. Like medical transcription. That's,
yeah.
A lot of times it's doctors saying their notes at the nurse's station, and there's people chattering in the background. I can't imagine. That would be probably awful.
Now, what do you think about her, like, speaking into her tape recorder, almost like she's doing a captain's log? So what did you think about that?
I thought it was kind of cute, but I sort of wondered why. You know, you're recording your voyage, I guess. It's your diary.
Mm-hmm.
It's just her version of that, I guess. Any ideas?
Oh, I think the writers used it so that they could, you know, they use it as a plot device so that it's not just her, you know, like speaking like Hamlet, monologuing, you know, like she actually has a purpose for why she's talking out loud. And I think it was a way to link her back to present day Janeway, or I should say future Janeway.
Yes.
And I think it was definitely, yeah, it was a device to link the two in a much stronger way, because we're so used to opening and closing an episode with Janeway doing the captain's log.
That's so true. I had never put a lot of thought into that, and boy, you're probably right, and that's pretty freaking clever. I like that. I like that a lot. I'm going to take my MP3 or my iPhone and do voice captain's logs now. That's going to be my equivalent of that, because I almost said tape recorder and then I realized I don't have a tape recorder. Are you serious? No way.
I mean, I think we've talked about this several times before, but I feel like lots of Star Trek fans had tape recorders and did captain's logs, but also used them to record their favorite audio segments from the episodes before, you know, like VCR, like before you could, you know, like take the episodes on your iPhone with you wherever you go. So obviously you couldn't have a portable TV. You couldn't have a portable VCR. So you would just at least listen to the episodes as you
I mean,
walked along.
Yeah, you didn't have those things, but you probably did have the Walkman. So yeah. You did that. Oh, yeah, I think we all did. All the kids in the 80s and 90s.
Yeah, I never knew that was a common thing until I came online and got other Star Trek friends. Like, I started saying that story, saying like, oh, yeah, I know I'm weird. And like, no, I did that, too.
Yeah, we all did that.
Yeah.
Yes, you're absolutely right. I had no idea other people did that. And I wouldn't confess that to anybody that wasn't already a Trek fan until I heard so many other Star Trek fans say that they did that. And then, oh, hey, how about that? That's cool that we all were doing that. We all loved it so much. Now, I really like this scene. You've got the chaos outside with the flashing lights. He's got the candle, and this is the collision. You know, this is them going head to head. He's stuck in the past. She's stuck in the future. Maybe they can meet in the middle.
Every single time I see this episode, all it makes me think about is, and this is such a small scale, but, you know, like living in the Midwest. Many of you who live in the Midwest understand, you know, if you have a basement, you most likely have a sump pump.
Yep. You've got to.
Yeah. But if you're not lucky enough to be on a sewer system. And my neighborhood that was built in the 50s was going to be put onto a sewer system. And I think in the mid 80s, right around the time I was born. And everybody in the neighborhood was on board except for one person. One person did not want to be on their sewer system, and no one knew why. And so it had to be unanimous in order for the city to put everybody on the sewer system. And he said no, and so everybody had to do sump pumps. We flooded constantly. Like, whenever there's a huge electrical storm and the power would go out, the sump pump would fail, and our basement would flood.
Oh,
and
no.
Every single time this happened, my dad would be on his hands and knees trying to plug the, you know, plug the outlets and the holes and everything like that. And he would just curse this man's name.
No.
Every
kidding.
Single time. And I always think about Henry Janeway holding out saying, I'm proving a point, blah, blah, blah. I'm an old man.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm a grumpy old man and this is all I've got left.
Yes. So what do you think about the whole old versus new, about tearing down history or changing a town and going towards what's new, what's fashionable? How do you feel? What camp are you in?
Oh, that's a really tough question. I really find myself doing 50-50. You know, sometimes it's for the greater good to look more toward the new and the future and to rebuild. Kind of like with the sump pump thing where, come on, that's better for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
So go with it. But then sometimes you really do need to take the time and space to preserve and remember. And I feel like it is very selective, and it should be. And I am not a good judge of what should stay in what should go. I'm glad that's not my responsibility because, you know, despite the introduction of this episode, I'm not an overly sentimental person most of the time. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times I would just say, yeah, go do it. But then, you know what? Sometimes, I don't know. You got to have at least a little bit of the past in order to see just how great the future is, if that makes any sense. What do you think?
Yeah, with me, I don't know. I always kind of feel like, you know, like new is good, new is great. You know, like I'm a big history nut, and so I'm a big history nut, and so I know the importance of history, and I know what it means to people and what it means to society. Even though but that's why we have books. And so I'm kind of the, you know, like burn it down and Camelot lives on. But I'm just kind of like, you know, let's move forward. Let's, you know, progress as a society. And I feel like let's take care of what we have. Let's build something new, but let's not be trapped by our own history.
That's probably a good way to put it. Let's not be trapped by it, but let's also build something to last, too. Mm-hmm. You know, I feel like a lot of the things we build today are not going to be around in a couple hundred years. They are going to tear it down. They are going to put new things in, and it's going to be totally forgotten. And I think that's half the idea, is we're making disposable things. And to an extent, that's not very good. I feel like some things should be built to last. The important stuff.
Well, I think it's funny because, you know, we're Americans and we have such a young country compared to the rest of the world.
Yes.
And so I feel like we're kind of trapped in that own teenage era where it's just like, okay, who cares? You know, like it's, you know, like, you know, as we drive around, we don't see castles that are 1,000 years old.
Right.
We see something from the 50s and we're like, wow, that's old.
You're right. We totally do, too. It's like, dang, that house has been there forever. But you think if we did have something older than, say, like a late 1700s house on the very eastern coast, that we'd have a different mentality?
I think so. Absolutely. 100%. I think if we were as old as Europe or Africa, I think we would definitely feel differently.
Yeah, if there were castles around here, you bet your ass I would want to preserve them. If nothing else, as a museum piece, because it would be really cool. Well, we are coming to the end of this episode already, and they're posing for the family portrait, which is kind of interesting. Neelix is holding the bottle of wine, champagne, or whatever it is.
I love that Neelix is holding the bottle, yeah.
Yeah, I guess that's just how he parties, and then... we cut to the Janeway family portrait we saw earlier in more of a live action shot. And there's this poor, awkward looking kid.
And his I love teeth. That they're all redheads.
Yes. Yes. Now, you've mentioned before that Janeway does not have the reddest hair.
No.
But I was watching Caretaker the other night. And Janeway's wig slash hair is definitely redder to start with than it is in later seasons. So I can definitely see why people are getting there. But if you want to count also that Janeway's ancestors were redheads, well, that counts too. Well, there you have it, folks. That was 11:59. What a good time. I always love this episode.
Yeah, it's a good time.
But 11:59 isn't the only thing that we've been talking about on Trek FM this week. Here's a glimpse at what else is happening on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
They just happen to come at just the right time.
Right,
or just
the wrong
the
right
time
for it to be dangerous.
Like, literally, like, not even, like, that day, but, like 2 minutes before this happens.
Earl Grey.
Well, it does all those cloak experiments. It deployed that communications array.
Minefield?
And the minefield for exploratory purposes.
Let's not talk about the Defiant, because you know it's just going to upset me.
To the journey!
What about Tommy?
Tommy is a drunk, and
he's drunk in the ready room meeting. His head's down, and so Janeway says, "Tom, anything?"
Just not so loud. Commentary, Trek stars.
You know what? See, the thing is now, if Star Trek Beyond goes sideways in any way, you've planted that line in my brain. I'm like, I only got half a peg, and I'm just going to trot that out. If I don't like Star Trek Beyond.
The 602 Club.
I remember hearing Timothy Zahn, even back then, reading an article that he was listening to the John Williams scores in his car as he was thinking all this through and making sure the pacing felt like it did with the music. So maybe it had to do with the certain music he was listening to. Maybe he was listening to a New Hope score at that point. I don't know.
Literary Treks.
I think we had between the three of us half a dozen or eight different springboards, and they were written in such a way that they could have gone to either ship and crew. It was like, you know, the Sagittarius encounters big blob in space, or Endeavor encounters derelict spacecraft, or I mean, I'm being real surface here. I mean, the prompts we provided in the Bible were probably just a couple of sentences long, and it was just meant to say these are the kinds of stories we're thinking about.
Women at Warp.
So we went in and pitched, and I have to say that was one of the most terrifying experiences of my life. I have scrubbed in on brain surgery. It did not frighten me as much as waiting outside Gene Roddenberry's office getting ready to go in and pitch to him.
Meta Treks.
You're not going to see a bunch of Klingons hanging around eating cake and you know, laughing at
well, unless it has, unless it's a peptide cake with mint frosting.
Peptide cake, indeed.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out all of our shows. You can get them wherever and however you get your podcasts. If you haven't gone on iTunes, please leave us a review. That is by far the best way that you can help us non-monetarily. And it takes only a few minutes of your time, but means a lot to us because it helps other people find the show. It helps up in the ratings and the rankings and whatever weird algorithm iTunes uses. But it does work because most people get their podcasts through iTunes. So that's a big help. Now, if you do have some money still laying around from your holiday shopping, please go to patreon.com/trekfm and consider becoming a monthly subscriber. We are a completely subscriber-based network. Everything that we have in terms of funds to store and distribute these podcasts comes from you. And that's really important that we have your support and your help. We want to thank our associate producers, Jamie Deuce, Kenneth Tripp, Aaron Harvey, and Bruce Lish. They are awesome for supporting us in particular, but the network at large. So thanks, guys. Now, next week, we have another fun thing coming up. What are we going to do?
It's Essential Trek of Season 4. This is where, Char, you and I go through every single episode of Season 4 and say, is it essential or is it not? And I always have a lot of fun with these episodes.
Oh, me too. I am always surprised at what we decide to keep as essential, what ends up on the cutting room floor. It's been a crazy journey, and I look forward to adding the next installment. But you're going to have to wait until next time. So until then, this has been To the Journey.
To the Journey!